The Siege of Vienna, 1683. The march on Vienna from July the 7th to July the 13th by the Ottomans. Now, the advance guard on July the 7th was surprised near Petronel by an attack of 15,000 Tartars, and the whole body was thrown into a confusion, which, but for the presence and exertions of its commander, might have been fatal. He was ably seconded by the Margrave Louis of Baden and the Duke of Schwanz-Lauenburg and others, and once order was restored, the enemy was repulsed without difficulty. About 200 men fell on the side of the Turks. The Austrians lost only 60. But among them were a young prince of Arnhemberg and Louis of Savoy, elder brother of the future conqueror of the Turks, Eugene. The first fell by the Turkish saber. The latter was crushed beneath his horse. The baggage of the Dukes of Schwarzenlauenburg and Croy, and of General Caparra, containing their plate, with which it was the fashion of the day for generals to slow themselves down by carrying all that equipment, fell into the hand of the Tartars. The tidings of this action produced an immediate effect on either party. The vizier, on the day after receiving them, crossed the Rob, took care to disseminate through his ranks exaggerated reports of the discomfiture and confusion of the Austrians, or the imperialists, and of the unprovided condition of Vienna. And while he stimulated the Janissaries by the prospect of an easy triumph and boundless plunder, he silenced the opposition of the timid and the wise by the promulgation of the Sultan's Hati Sharif, which invested him with sole and unlimited power to command. Some time, however, had been lost in the deliberation and in going through the formality of the investment of Rob, and these moments were precious to the defenders of Vienna. The usual tendency to exaggerate evil tidings had strongly displayed itself in the city. The skirmish at Petronel had been magnified into the total defeat and hasty flight of the imperial army. Those who had been the first to leave the field and therefore knew least of the actual result were the people who provided this intelligence. It derived dismal probability from the flames which reddened the nightly horizon in many directions and at no great distance. The Emperor Leopold was not one of those rare instances of military talent on the throne, which appear once perhaps in a century in the shape of a Gustavus Adolphus, a John Sobieski, or a Charles XII. Such men, by their sheer presence, would have made a capital impregnable. Leopold would have been but an encumbrance during a siege, and he adopted the wiser course of removing himself and his court to a sufficient distance from the scene of danger. Before, however, he had decided on the step, events had left him little time to lose, and it had become a matter of serious deliberation which road he should take to avoid the risk of falling into the hands of the Tartar cavalry. The direct road to Linz was adjudged by his council no longer free from danger. It was determined that he should make his way by the left bank of the Danube. So Leopold is not going to stay in Vienna, he's going to leave. Not a good morale booster. On the evening of the 7th, therefore, a long file of imperial carriages left through the Rothrum Gate, crossed the Leopoldstadt Island and the Tabor River, and reached that evening the village of Chorneuburg, some 15 miles from Vienna, which had been previously occupied by a small detachment of musketeers under an Irish officer whose name, probably O'Haggerty, has been Germanized into von Hofti. Thence he pursued his journey to Linz, but not without serious risk. It is said that but for the prompt and able interference of the French envoy, the Marquis de Shepville, caused a part of the bridge at Krems to be removed, the emperor and the entire suite would have fallen into the hands of the Tartars. It would be a curious matter of inquiry how far this important service was approved at Versailles. It is evident that the first route proposed would have consigned the head of the empire, his consort, who was far advanced in pregnancy, the emperor's mother, into the hands of the Tartars. Even Linz was considered insecure, and the royal party continued its discreditable flight till it found refuge beyond the frontier of its own domains in the Bavarian fortress of Passau. From 9 in the evening until 2 the following morning, the carriages of the wealthier fugitives, who followed the example of the court, filed over the Tabor Bridge, lighted on their routes by flames from the Carmelite convent at Kahlenberg. They left the city in a state of well-grounded alarm and discontent, bordering on revolt. The public feeling was strongly evinced against the Jesuits, who were not unjustly accused of having instigated the naturally mild disposition of the emperor to courses which had alienated the affections of the Protestants and driven them into the arms of the infidel enemy. The city, also, left to itself, was at this moment nearly without a garrison. Besides the usual burgher guard, a mere police force, the regiment of Kaiserstein, about 1,000 strong, were the only troops within the walls of Vienna. The palisades were not fixed, the bastions unprovided with artillery or gabions. The number of those left in the city on the 6th and the 7th of July amounted to 60,000. Of whom a large proportion, whose means of conveyance failed them on the way, and all those who took the road to Styria, fell into the hands of the enemy. The Turks are said to have used bloodhounds to hunt down those who fled into the woods. So large an emigration reduced to a fearful extent the number of citizens capable of bearing arms. The courage, however, of this remnant was somewhat restored on the 8th by the appearance of the cavalry, who filed through the city with such military clamor and display and encamped in the meadow near the Tabor. This substantial contradiction of the rumor previously circulated of the total destruction of the imperial army was well calculated to produce a reaction in the public mind. But a still happier impression was made by the arrival on the same day of Ernst Rüdiger, Count of Schramberg, another pupil of the Montecuculi school, to whom, on the score of his successful defense of Moravia against the incursions of Tekle in 1681, the emperor now confided the command and defense of the city. He lost no time in setting all hands to work on the fortifications, but at first little more could be done than complete the fixing of the palisades. For the scarcely credible fact is on record that the necessary works from the main defense of the city could not be prosecuted because they lacked common and essential tools. The annals of the city are silent as to the parties responsible for this neglect. It is certain that if the Turks had not lingered before Raab, or if by greater expedition on the march they had arrived before Vienna a few hours sooner than they did, the city probably would have fallen without a blow. It was not until the following day, after Stromberg's arrival, by the unwearied exhortations of the imperial chancellor, Benedict Geiser, the contents of the sacred archives and the treasury were conveyed away by the Danube under circumstances of imminent peril. The population of all classes, the richest citizens and even women and ecclesiastics, now labored unremittingly at the fortifications. The Burgermeister von Liebenberg set the example, doing active service with a wheelbarrow. The wood stored for building or fuel without the walls was conveyed into the town. Every householder was enjoined to have water ready on his roof, and all persons whose usual employment would be in abeyance during the siege were armed and taken into the regular service of the state. They formed a body of just 1,200 people. The most important works were conducted between the 7th and the 12th of July, and towards the end of that period, almost under the eye of the enemy, who on the 10th had crossed the Austrian frontier at Hungarian Altenburg, destroying everything as they advanced. At close Sternenberg, a number of boats were collected for the construction of a floating bridge there in case of necessity, and arsenals were well stored with ammunition brought by water from Krems. On the 12th, the nearer vicinity of the enemy was evinced by the contracting circle of blazing villages. From the Hungarian frontier to the neighborhood of the Kahlenberg, every unfortified place bore lurid token of Turkish occupation. Baden, Molding, Ebenfurt, Inzersdorf, Pollendorf, Laxenburg, La, Neustadt alone, however, held out by the strength of its walls and the gallantry of its forces. The marauders followed the course of the Danube into the upper province and even into Bavaria and Swabia. The terror of their rumored approach was such that many inhabitants fled with their movable effects to Switzerland over the Rhine. On the 13th of July, towards 8 a.m., several bodies of Turkish horse showed themselves. Thence they spread themselves out to Schönbrunn, Heitzing, Ochtrun, Hernaus, Wallering, and as far as Döbling and Neustorf. Towards 2 p.m., another numerous body showed itself from St. Mark's, which took possession of the whole ground from the so-called Gatterholz to the Hundenstrom. The first fire from the city was opened on these troops, which caused them to retire behind the enclosures of numerous vineyards that are located in this neighborhood. At this, the last available moment, the commandant gave the order, which an hour's delay would have made impossible to execute, and that was to set fire to the suburbs, the inhabitants of which had on the previous day removed their property into the city. The conflagration was general and effective for its purpose. Most costly buildings, public as well as private, were its victims, and many valuable contents still remained and shared their fate. Then a high wind sprung up at the same time, and as much timber was still accumulated near the palisades and up to the walls of the city, it required the exertions of the commandant and the city authorities to prevent Vienna itself from sharing the disaster, which was intended to preserve it. So that's the position at the end of July the 13th. The Turks are now in place. The emperor has fled. That's a morale breaker. And so now we'll begin the process of besieging the city and keeping track of just how well Sobieski's forces are doing. Now the sources for this: the Siege of Vienna, The Bulwark of Christendom by Schimmel, Great Sieges by Meligari, Enemy at the Gates by Wheatcraft, Sword and Scimitar by Ibrahim, and The History of the Ottoman Empire by Howard. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out the merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.